What do you think it means to be a person?
I don't know.
Me either.
Really.
Say scratch that again.
Scratch that a fan.
I'm Caitlin Metz, a non-binary illustrator and designer.
I'm Rebecca Tossig, a disabled storyteller and writer.
And this is Scratch That, Parenting and Reparenting Off Script.
A podcast for people trying to parent and person at the same time.
Head over to our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast, for show notes and a transcript of today's episode, and also to join the conversation.
Thank you for being here. Hey, friend.
Hello. Good morning. I am so excited. I have been holding it in since we got on this call together. I'm not asking so we don't waste our actual, like, really juicy, good conversation. You went to auto school this week and you read books, and I just want to know everything about that experience on all levels. So just give me a debrief.
Okay. Well, and part of the context of this visit was that Otto's at a new school this year, and it is a new experience for me to be a visibly disabled parent in the world and interact with children. I'm very used to interacting with children around my wheelchair. I'm used to kids' questions and had my own way of navigating that before Otto. And now, going to this new school and entering his new classroom, it's been a fresh wave of lots of questions about my legs and my wheelchair and why I use it. And so talking with the teacher, we were trying to come up with strategies of, like, how it would feel good to manage that or engage that. My thinking on this has really shifted over time. So I've kind of struggled to figure out, like, what does feel like the right way? What does feel like a good way to handle this? And initially, you know, people had suggested, like, oh, maybe you could come in and talk to the kids about your wheelchair or your disability. And this thing in me was just like, ugh, no, like, I don't want to do that. In part because I'm thinking so much about Otto's experience of this. And what would it feel like for him to have his mom come in and explain herself to these kids? And how would he receive that experience? But also thinking, like, more broadly for all the experience of the kids in that room, the signal to them that there is something singularly, exceptionally different about me when, like, all of our families are full of all kinds of differences, and wanting my difference to coexist alongside all kinds of differences within families and parents. And so all that to say, the teacher kind of opened up this reading buddies option for all the parents in the class. And so there's different days we can come in and just read books with the kids in this class. And I was one of the last parents to sign up. So I'm one of the last of the month. And I came in, and the setup is supposed to be that you, like, read with one kid at a time, which did not happen in our experience. But what I did was I brought in this giant stack of books that we love in our house. And some of them included disability and some of them didn't. And then the kids just got to pick what book they wanted me to read to them. And I liked that, you know, they could look through these covers and see different images and different bodies on them. And interestingly enough, most of the kids picked The Circus Ship. It's a very good book. It has nothing to do with disability in any way. It's about these circus animals that are shipwrecked, and it's, like, got really beautiful words that are fun to read. And there's 15 circus animals, and so they get to, like, count the number of animals on every page, and sometimes they're hiding, and it's, like, part book, part, it's very lyrical, and then part, like, find these animals. And so I read that book maybe 4 times to different groups of kids. And then the books I brought that included disability are among my favorite. I brought Come Over to My House, which is written by Eliza Hall. I brought Bodies Are Cool by Tyler Fetter. Bodies Are Cool is one of my all-time favorites. I brought a new book called This Is How We Play by Jessica Slice. And that one is also really fun to read. It invites a lot of conversations about what play looks like in different people's families. And then I know I brought one more. Oh, Mama Car by Lucy Catchpole, which just came out. And all of these books are in our bookshop. So if you want to check them out there, and if you purchase them through there, we get like a teeny kickback, which is nice, but they're all there if you want to look at our bookshop and look at those titles and learn more about those books. But those were the books I brought that included disability. And what ended up happening is that there were like 6 or 7 kids kind of huddled around with each book that we read, and most of them picked The Circus Ship, and one of them picked This Is How We Play. And we read all of those books. Another one was Cake Girl, and that's one of our favorite books, nothing to do with disability, but we read that one too. And it was really interesting. There were 2 kids that asked about my wheelchair, which happens almost every time that I pick Otto up from school. It's often the same kids. But one of the things I loved about it, and the moment that I think I'm like the embodied memory of it is something that's really sticking with me, was the way that the kids sort of gathered around me in my wheelchair. And I remember distinctly this one moment where one of the kids like put her elbow on my wheel and other kids sort of leaned against the frame on the side. And I know people have different feelings about that. Like not everybody wants people touching their chair, but in the intimacy of what the moment was, of sort of like huddling together, it felt to me like they felt comfortable and that they saw that this wheelchair as like an extension of me, and there was coziness in that, which is how Otto experiences my chair. So I think what I really loved about it was we didn't have to have a conversation about why and how and what's the origin story of this wheelchair for you. But they had that chance to just have familiarity around this different way of moving through the world in a way that was embodied. Like they got to experience that moment with me and build that familiarity and comfort with me. And that to me felt like a larger goal. It felt better than explaining anything. I think a lot of times we want there to be familiarity and ease. And so it feels like the way to do that is just explain yourself so they understand why do your legs move that way. But I don't think that that is nearly as important as just getting over that hump of difference and recognizing that person who you observe as different as being a human, like any other human, and getting to coexist with them and know them a little bit more. So I think that was maybe my big takeaway from the experience. And, you know, I'm going to be a reading buddy again, so we'll see how this continues to evolve. We've got a whole year ahead of us, and I'm curious about how that might evolve for us and what those relationships might look like. But it felt like a good beginning.
The part where you're talking about people having different feelings about interacting with wheelchairs, just when you think about, we all have different feelings about how we in our bodies interact with people in general. And the act of, like, the kids, I'm assuming all of those kids are very familiar with story time and being read to. And that it just by like being somewhere around kids and saying, do you want to read a story, is like an unspoken invitation to like sit on a lap, to like cuddle, to be together. So it feels just so natural and right. And that's really different than a kid coming up and like poking your chair and being like, what is this? It's beautiful the way that you brought difference into the space without making it different, which I think is the thing that we fall into where we create difference where it doesn't even need to exist, is by over-explaining the thing, like coming in to show your wheelchair. Of course, they would want to come cuddle close because that's the thing that you do.
I actually really like us underscoring that point, though, because there have been kids in that class who have tried to push me, for example, and it's a very hard no in my book. I do not like that. And so I will say, I'm the one in charge of my wheelchair, thank you, or something like that. And that feels entirely different than like a cozy moment together. And I do think that's an important distinction to make. I mean, at least that is a hard line that I have and one that I've heard from other people too. So that's worth noting.
Yeah. And we all have specific ways that we want our body and the things that our bodies are next to be handled. You've been doing the school stuff much longer than I have. It's really new to me. But I'm just really curious what it felt like to go in as Otto's mom and like be in that space with other kids. What did it feel like to be there reading stories as part of his school? It feels so like vulnerable and naked to me.
I think that this experience goes back a little ways. It's a very big difference to me to move through the world as I am by myself than it is being attached to Otto in a way that I didn't know how to anticipate. It feels entirely different. and in a way that feels like really uncharted territory for me. I didn't start feeling the way I feel now until Otto was about 3. I think because that is when his peers started to ask questions. Before then, his peers didn't seem to really notice or care about the wheelchair being there. So when that changed for them developmentally, it became a new experience for me. And that was last year. He was at a different school. We've had 3 different schools so far, or like some of them are more daycares than schools. But last year was the beginning of like a lot of questions. And last year, it felt really sad for me because it was like a defining part of every pickup. Micah always does drop off because it's like too excruciating and I'm not a good parent for it. It's not good for Otto either. It's too hard.
Andrew just did drop up today and he was like, it was a breeze. And I was so angry.
And you do it every time.
Yeah. I'm like, great. It complicates our day just because of where we work and the car situation. But I'm like, I don't care. I'm never dropping him off again.
I hate it.
And it's just so fine for them. And when I do it, it's like screaming terror.
Yes. I mean, and like I'm crying, but like it's so much worse for Otto too. So Mike always does drop off and I always do pick up. It was the moment that I wanted to reunite with him and like kiss his cheeks and look in his face. And it's just like all of these children are like, why are you using that wheelchair? What is that wheelchair? Why can't you walk? Like it was just relentless. And it was often the same kids over and over again. So it felt like I don't know how to satiate what is happening here because I told you my answer, which these days, I'm sure it will change as the peer group gets older. But these days, what I say over and over again is like, this is the way that I move through the world. This is how I get around. How do you move through the world? How do you get around? And then they talk about their legs and running and jumping. But then I'm like, do you ever use wheels? And we talk about cars and bikes and scooters. And so it just turns into a little bit of a different conversation, which I like. But then somehow, for some kids, they just want to talk about it again. That whole year, last year, I felt a little bit perplexed as to what to do with that because I didn't love it. It's not the worst thing. I totally get the curiosity. I totally understand. It's not like I'm like, oh, you terrible children. And why didn't your parents teach you better? I don't feel that way, but I also don't love it. It's also really hard. So that's why I went into this year feeling like I want to be more intentional about this and maybe have a chance to spend more time with these kids and hope that red flag that goes up in their brains when they see me gets to, I don't know, calm down a little bit. And then maybe they can have different kinds of questions for me or we can interact with each other in a different way. But it is very hard. But I'm curious for you. I mean, like, do you feel anything as going into these spaces with Charlie as a non-binary parent? Does that ever come up for you? And does it feel, I don't know what that feels like for you either as you're getting used to a school setting and these peers?
Well, we are doing a really non-traditional route. I'm not experiencing that.
Like questions.
Yeah, it's just that we're really intentionally moving through spaces that are not traditional, which I think alleviates some of that. But I just feel so naked dropping him off, picking him up. I still just like don't always feel that comfortable around other parents because I'm like, am I doing this right? Like, do you know so much more than me? Everyone else looks like such a grown up to me and I feel like a child. And I'm sure we're all like the same age, but I just feel like a kid. And then when I'm dropping him off, I'm just like, everyone's watching me. And he has been having, not in the beginning, but like, the last month has been just so hard with drop-offs. Like, parents are sending me really sweet messages afterwards to be like very comforting, which is like so kind and affirming. And like one day really, really meant a lot to me. But also I'm just hyper aware that like everyone is witnessing me. And I think part of that is I just started parenting in a cocoon. I felt really steady being a parent, but not being watched.
We need to do a whole episode that is parenting in public.
Yeah. And I am always trying to give myself a pep talk where like, I will parent the same in public as I do in private. I will parent the same in public as I do in private. It's really hard. It's really hard because there's so many narratives in my head about what your child's behavior reflects on you and like how they should just be immediately complying. And Yeah. So I just feel really nervous. And I never went to school. So being homeschooled the whole time, I'm like always peppering people with questions. I'm like, what do you remember about kindergarten and elementary school? And like, what is your experience of school? Because I just don't know. So it's like, it's many layers. But the thought of going in and like reading to the kids and being in the classroom just feels so incredibly vulnerable to me. It's like his environment, his space, then I'm coming into it. And I don't always know all the rules.
I did say several times, what are the rules here? I don't know. They would ask me something. And I'd be like, what are the rules here? Yeah, I'm not in charge of anything in this space. You said something about like a child's behavior reflecting on you as a parent. And of course, like, I would love to meet the person who doesn't experience that or feel that way. Because it feels like such a defining part of this is like, whoever this person is somehow this direct reflection of who I am as a parent, when so often I don't think it is. And we know that intellectually, but it's very hard to let go of that narrative. I think that that comes up for a lot of parents around this urgency that we have to like, how do we talk about disability with our kids so that we can get it right? And so that they will go out in the world and reflect our values and how we've taught them to talk about this in the world. And I just want to say that I don't think there is a secret code for how to talk to your kids about disability in a way that will erase the awkwardness of moments when they point to someone and say, what happened? I don't think there is a secret recipe for that to avoid those uncomfortable moments. One reason I don't think there's a secret recipe to that is that I live in a wheelchair around my son every day of his entire life. And when he was like 2 or something, we went to the farmer's market and he saw someone in a wheelchair and pointed at them and said very loudly, what happened? And I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, where did that come from? Right? Like, I had no way of wrapping my head around what was happening in his brain. And so I just say that I just don't believe that there is the perfect way to avoid those moments. And so I think we have to think about what the long-term goals are. The goal can't be, we are going to parent in a way that erases those uncomfortable moments. We will get it right and they will know the right thing to say and they will never do something like that. I think the goal has to be a longer-term goal. So then the next piece is like defining what that goal is. And I think that that has been what I've been clarifying with Otto in my own mind more of like, what am I actually trying to teach him? That was not the only time that it happened, by the way, like where Otto has made a comment about somebody's body in public. It was the first and it was shocking. But there have been other moments where I'm like, oh, that's not what I would have wanted to have taught you how to talk about someone. And so it's clarified for me, like, what are the long-term goals? And I think for me, there are a couple. One is I want him to move through the world and into an adult who understands that there are a million ways to live in a body, that human variance is infinite, and that that is a gorgeous part of being a human, that that is a beautiful thing about our world, is that our bodies come in an infinite range of packaging, and that that looks like and moves like and sounds like an infinite number of ways. So that is one long-term goal that I have, is that he would ease into that and have comfort and joy in that. And a second thing that's much more specific that I want to teach him is that we do not ask questions about people's bodies unless they initiate that conversation. I think specifically as someone with a visible disability, it is very important to me. And this reminds me of our conversation with Nina that we had. It's very important to me that Otto not feel entitled to people's personal information just because he notices a difference in someone. I don't think anyone should be expected to disclose their medical information to any other human ever. And so that is, I think that's become a really defining part of my long-term goals, because there is a really common narrative around disability with children. And I think there's even a book that's called like, Just Ask. And I don't think that's a helpful script. Ask somebody about what they're interested in, or ask somebody if they have a cat or if they like Halloween, right? Like the question to ask is one that gets to know a person and is an easy way into an introductory relationship with someone. We should never be obligated to or feel obligated to explain our bodies to people, disclose personal information. So that feels like a really hard, easy, clear, not easy as in easy to teach always, but a very clear goal, like long-term goal.
Interrupting this episode to say thank you to everyone supporting the podcast on Patreon.
Our goal for 2025 is to reach $900 on Patreon each month. This would cover our overhead so that we're not paying out of pocket each month to produce these episodes.
And just so you know where your money is going, the episodes are perfected by Amelia of Softer Sounds. She runs her studio with a rare humanity, and we feel so good partnering with her.
If you believe in these episodes, if you enjoy these conversations and want them to keep showing up in your feed, would you consider joining our Patreon?
You can join for $5 a month, which comes out to $1.25 per episode. Such a deal.
If you can't support financially, there are lots of ways that you can rally around this podcast, sharing a favorite episode with a friend or on social media, leaving a 5-star review. All of that really helps us keep this thing afloat.
Thanks. We love you so much. Back to the show.
How you approach this with Charlie?
Oh, usually we encounter a really uncomfortable situation and then I quickly try and work on a script. The earliest ones that we were having when Charlie was younger, we lived in an area where we were frequently encountering unhoused folks, and he always wanted to like know who people were, or like the heart of what he was getting at was like, he's just like the friendliest child I've ever known. He's like, knows no strangers. But when he was like too early into three, it like caused some like really awkward moments. And so we quickly started working on scripts around how do we say hi to people that we pass on the street instead of saying like, who's that guy? Or like, what is that person doing? You could say, hi, my name's Charlie. What's yours? So just like humanizing an experience, or like seeing someone sleeping on a bench and to be like, what are they doing? And just saying like, that person was tired. We get tired sometimes and that person is like laying down and resting. I don't know if I'm like doing all of that gracefully, but that was like an early one that we were working on. Right now, it's been like calling people old at the grocery stores, not as an insult, but just be like, who's that old man? Which is like, valid. We call him like baby boy. And the conversations we've been having lately are about like what feels polite or comfortable. And like that is a fact, but often some people can feel uncomfortable about that. The thing that I'm feeling really unsure about is we live in the Midwest. I just feel like sometimes our life gets so insular and we just see the same people all the time. And I'm just like been realizing lately there's not that much range of difference. So I've been lately thinking about like, how am I exposing him to difference? Because he's so much seeing the same thing, to the point where like my queer ass was reading him a book about like two dads. And he was like, which one's the mama? And I was like, oh, this kid has two dads. And he was like, that's not a thing. And I was like, oh, that really is a thing. And so I'm like, oh God, we need to be like hanging out with more queer parents. And you know, on the surface, from his perspective, our family looks like this traditional mom and dad thing, which he doesn't even understand what traditional is. But yeah, I don't know where I was going with that, except for I'm trying to figure out how do I expose him to more things when he's not actually in his day-to-day life experiencing the full range that is the world without exposing it to him as like some like novelty or something exotic. How do we make it so normal? Which is why I think books are like the number one way that we're doing that right now. But it's hard for me to always know how to talk about something until we've bumped up against something awkward. And so I'm like, how do I proactively talk about the things when I'm not even quite sure what they are? That's where I'm sitting, is just like, how do I diversify our experience, who he's existing with, and when that isn't happening actually in real life, what are the other ways to do that?
Yeah. My head just exploded. But one thing that with ideas of thoughts about what you just said, but one thing I have to say is that you have done a great job of teaching Charlie how to talk to people. The other day when we were Zooming and he popped on the call, I was like, who is this little sweetie? He said, you were like, that's Rebecca. And he said, I know Rebecca. hi, Rebecca, how are you doing? And I was like, what? You are the sweetest little human. So I think you gave him a script that he feels empowered to use in a very beautiful way. The other thing that is tricky about this that I'm thinking about as you're describing, like, how to anticipate the things and how to know how to talk about all of them. I mean, I think one thing that is tricky in figuring out how to talk to our kids about all kinds of difference is that it feels really easy to, like, reinforce a stigma, a kind of difference. And so, like, so tricky to figure out, like, I want to teach you not to, like, comment on every difference that you notice, but, like, there's nothing wrong with being old. There's nothing wrong with being disabled. These things that you're pointing out aren't bad, but then why can't I say them out loud when I'm pointing at someone? And, like, what's the line, or how do we talk about that? On the one hand, I would say something like, we just don't comment on people's bodies, but that's hard because they're, like, making sense of the world and they're trying to notice patterns. And also, is that always a good rule? Because I will tell you, there's this one kid in Otto's class, oh my gosh, I love her, that has never, ever once said a single thing about my wheelchair that I can remember. But every time I wear gold eyeliner, she's like, you have gold on your eyes. And I'm like, I do. Do you ever play with makeup? Like, we just get to talk about that thing. But she's talking about my body, you know, like, it's just so tricky to come up with, like, the blanket rule.
Yeah, the blanket rule. And I don't want to approach him asking about, I don't know if this is the right thing, but I don't want to speak differently about when he asks, like, why someone has braces, which feels pretty innocuous to me. And I'd be like, oh, like, that's how this is used. And I had that when I was a kid. Willie can look at pictures of mama with braces later. I don't know if we've talked about this, but we were meeting a potential sitter and she had braces and she had, like, those perfect little baby hairs. She was mixed. He noticed both of those and was asking me questions about them. And it felt so easy for me to talk about the braces. And I felt, like, a little bit at a loss, or, like, embarrassed that he was calling out her hair. And I was like, that shouldn't have been that's not embarrassing. And also, I don't know how she felt about it. Like, hair is such a tender thing. But I feel like I am giving him an unconscious message if some things about people's bodies are hush-hush that we don't talk about and some are fine. And so how do I make it all neutral and also teach him respect and have, like, not awkward public interactions? Like, there's so many layers.
Another piece of it to me is, like, we don't know how those people feel about that thing you're commenting on, right? And so it's like, I know a lot of people with disabilities who are like, oh, I would much rather a kid ask me, and I'm happy to answer, and just, like, great for you. But, like, some people really don't, and, like, don't, specifically thinking about disability, a lot of disability is acquired through trauma. I don't want to have to answer and talk about that every time I go anywhere because your kid is curious, right? Like, and it makes sense that your kid is curious. And also, And even for me, like, I really don't mind kids asking questions until my kid is there. And I, like, feel like I'm suddenly having to be pulled away from him, and he's, like, receiving a message through that experience too. Like, we were at the playground the other day and there was this kid who was, like, aggressively shouting at me, like, why do you use that wheelchair? And every time I tried to answer, it, like, didn't satisfy him. And I saw his mom across the playground and she just kept, I could tell she was just in agony, but she just kept, like, saying his name cringily, just like Albert, whatever his name was. It wasn't Albert. And so eventually I said, which I've never done before with a child ever in my life, I was, like, there to be with my kid. And eventually I said, I don't really want to talk about it. And then I tried really hard to just, like, be friendly in another conversation. But all that to say, I just feel like one of the things that makes it tricky is that we don't know how someone feels about that embodiment. There's so much nuance that we have absorbed in this world over time that has equipped us to navigate that. And it's hard to teach the nuance of that to a kid. And so,
what my experience of this was, anytime we saw anyone, I remember we were in a Goodwill and two, like, very visibly gay men walked in, and my mom, we just put everything away and left. Like, we weren't even allowed to be there anymore. And anytime we saw someone who looked gender nonconforming, we called them he, she's. But I got this, like, direct message that it was bad. We didn't talk about it. We did not talk about it. We didn't look at them. And the only time we kind of referenced them was to mock. The first time I had any interaction with an openly queer person was when I was 16 and I got a job at McDonald's.
I didn't know you worked at McDonald's.
Yeah, that was my first like real job. I started working as a sitter when I was like 12, but yeah. Oh, and I also had a crush on, it was like my manager and I had such a crush and I was so confused. It was such a confusing time. And one of my coworkers was gay, but like I couldn't talk about them. But yeah, there were just so many times in my childhood where if something was said inappropriately, it was just like, hush, shut down. There was not a wider conversation. There was so much shame around it. And I just don't want to pass that on. But I don't know how to infuse this nuance.
Yeah, right, right. That sort of like silence and we don't talk about that is definitely something that I've experienced around disability. It's so common for me to move through a space and have people like pull their kids away from me. And I think it's just like an impulse of like, I don't want my kid to be in that lady's way or whatever. But there's just, it feels like this, like, don't engage, don't interact is an often impulse, or go ask her why she's in that wheelchair. Opposite ends of the same spectrum. And I guess the thing that I hope and wish for is like general open curiosity about who the humans are among us and wanting to learn to engage in like a neutral, curious, open way without an expectation that people explain themselves to us or the things that we notice about them. And that is, it is a nuance and it is hard. And I just don't know that there's the lesson that we can hand over that solves every potential awkward interaction. I mean, the way that you talk about how things come up organically with you and Charlie, like you don't know to have that conversation until you're having it. It does feel like that's a good way for him to learn. Like you talking about the two dads in the family and he gets to hear that correction or that you get to explain that part of the world to him and then he gets to learn it in real time when it's already something activated in his brain. It's just that he didn't have the answer ahead of time, but like maybe that makes sense a little bit that like that the process of learning these things would happen as we explore them and that can be messy and clunky but eventually in that like long-term picture, we arrive at this place where we recognize beauty in the infinite difference and respect people's boundaries. And I do think that the books, I mean, it's not the same and it's not perfect to teach our kids through books, but wow, it's a really good tool when we don't have access to that difference every day in our real ordinary lives. That's why I love Bodies Are Cool. It's a great tool for that very thing.
There's so many books that just keep coming out that explore so many different things. Well, okay, so one thing I was going to ask you earlier was you had mentioned, I think before we started recording, that some of the things that stuck out to you from being at auto school was like that some things were really hard. And then you mentioned that something felt anticlimactic. So I don't know if you want to talk about that at all.
Oh, okay. Any more of the experience in the school?
What felt hard about it?
One of the things that has been really cool about coming to this new school is that the administration at the school seems really invested in accessibility for me as his parent. It's also a pretty small little school. It meets in like a really old church. So it's not like the new public school access built into it from the beginning sort of space. One of the things I love is before the first day of school, the head lady, I don't know what her title is, called me. She just prefaced it by saying something like, we've been trying to make sure that the school is going to be fully accessible to you. But then I realized I don't really know what to look for necessarily. Like, would you mind coming into the school and going through all the spaces with me so that you can tell me what needs to be addressed or whatever? And I loved it so much. I almost started crying. A, just the fact that they were thinking about it at all, but B, that insight to understand, like, I'm not going to know exactly. You are the expert on this. And so you can speak to us about that. And so we went through the whole school and I'm so used to being like, I can make that work. And they're like, no, what could we do to make it easy though? There was like this little tiny ledge leading into the playground and they're like, they cemented it over. So it's like this smooth entrance. So I wanted to highlight that as really exceptional and like a really good example of a community recognizing a gap in access and wanting to really address that meaningfully. It has felt really good to me. And they've been really mindful of it throughout the year. Like, well done. It made me feel like, oh, we're in the right place.
Yeah, exceptional and also should be baseline.
Ideally, it wouldn't even have to be a conversation from the beginning, right? Like, if we had been building with access in mind since 1990, like we were supposed to, maybe we wouldn't need that. Yeah, it stood out to me. The like humility, I guess, if that's the right word, of like, she was exposing herself to say, like, we're not perfect yet, which is like, I know. But like, she's having to like grapple that with me openly, one-on-one, like looking at the ways that it wasn't ready for me yet. That's really cool.
That is the way that we should be having these conversations. Like, you are directly in their community. It's not just a random stranger being like, how do you move through the world? Yeah, it just felt like an invitation for intimacy. She got the assignment.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, since my book came out, there's so many people who are like, okay, what are the three things we can do right now to make this space more accessible? And it's like, okay, we can have that conversation. And or who's in your community? Who can you talk to who's with you in the actual space that you're in? I know that that's not a perfect system. It's not like it should always be on the shoulders of those people to like explain everything and be like having to offer design tips and stuff. Like, we should be doing that already. But also, in as a part of it, I think it's like knowing who is among you. And that's not just disability. It's like, what are the unique needs of these specific people? And how can we meet that? And that is always an ongoing conversation, or should be. There's a whole host of humans here with a whole range of needs. What are they? And how can we fill the gap the best way that we can? So I loved it. It meant a ton to me.
Talking specifically to your community and the people who are going to directly be using this space is honoring that there's not one way that people are disabled, or there's not one correct answer. And I think that maybe that's where we're getting it wrong, is that we're trying to find the one answer instead of just getting to know the people in the space. Andrew's family, it's been like 3 years since I've been out to them as non-binary. And the moments where they have just like paused to check in about what feels good. Andrew's sister had a baby recently, and her husband were like asking me about like language. And it was like a, I don't know, 90-second conversation. Like, it was not drawn out. It wasn't a big thing. But just knowing that they would see me and ask a question and not presume to know, because there's so many different ways that people use language and move through the world. And I have a whole host of identities, and I have, you know, fulfilled an aunt role since I was 15 and been really active participant in my nieces and nephews' lives. And so there's certain languages that it just feels like baked into my identity now. It feels so good when someone will just see you and you as an individual person and just ask the question, like, what feels good to you? Like, what do you want or need? And that feels less like that I'm doing emotional labor for something and more like someone's wanting to get to know me.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. I'm thinking, as you're talking about how to be in community with each other and like the specificity of individual humans and getting to know individual humans, that feels like what we would be trying to teach our kids around in these conversations about the questions that come up for them about a wheelchair, but thinking like trying to reframe that as like, this is a person in our community and how do we get to know them as a human? But it is tricky because you're describing these questions that do feel good. Like, what language do you want? Which is a good question. And then these other questions that are like, what's your medical history, that don't feel good. And so it is a tricky thing to teach our kids, like, what are the good questions and what are not? And bringing each of that to like these individual human beings that have different feelings about those questions. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm just underscoring again how tricky that is and how to think about that. I do feel like getting to know each other as whole humans is a good part of the project. So maybe part of it is just giving our kids the scripts as they come up, as like different scripts that can be useful and that we can build on as they get older.
And getting to know people is messy. I'm thinking about like the Southern politeness or like 1800s etiquette books. And so much of it is just this like rote formula, and it's so disconnected, and everyone's so concerned with like being polite. I think relationship is messy and getting to know people is messy. And the way that we're approaching bodies and the lack of shame in our household also means that Charlie makes some really inappropriate fart jokes in public. Then now I'm walking it back a little and being like, okay, these are private jokes that we do at home that are funny, you know, and like we have just such body openness. Our home is, we just have a very like free, open, naked bodied home where there's just like not shame about body parts. We talk about all of our body parts anatomically, but then also sometimes body parts will just appear in public that shouldn't be in public. And so now I'm pulling that back, but what he is not learning is any shame about his body. And now I'm learning what the nuance is. And so I'm learning on the fly. And I think, you know, when I was a kid, it was probably much tidier and I was not doing any of that stuff in public because my God, I would never, I didn't even have language for my body. I just think the messiness is the beauty of what we're doing. And it's not tidy. None of that. We cannot do any of this perfectly tidy. And I think when we try is when we start othering and like blocking things off and hiding. Like there's just so much shame involved.
Yeah. It is going to be messy unless you have the very rigid black and white script. And if you have a very rigid black and white script, then there will be some harm that comes with that too, right? Like something will be missed or some kind of stigma or shame might creep in there or whatever. I do think that it is quite messy. I mean, I think that we can have these loose principles and then obviously we'll keep writing them as we go, as I have and you have. So I don't know. It's like so uncomfortable and hard to let things be messy, especially when they're in public, especially when we have this narrative in our heads that our kids' behaviors reflect our parenting. That is hard.
I feel like we just circled so many different.
And did we land at exactly the place that we started? Maybe. I mean, what are the takeaways? That messiness is a part of the experience, but that I think the way that we show up in those messy moments, even a little bit after the messy moments, it's really, I find myself freezing a lot in real time because I'm not expecting it. Maybe I should have been, but I wasn't. And I don't know the thing to say right away. And so, and then I learn it. And then the next time I have it in my pocket, like it is quite messy, but I think it's returning to those conversations and reinforcing the long-term big goals that we have for our kids' understanding. Yeah.
Yeah. And thinking about this all in relationship, there's not like one size fits all. And I think if we could teach our kids that, every experience is different. Every body is different. And if we're teaching them like empathy and sensitivity, body language, awareness, just like how to like read someone, how to like pay attention to them specifically. I am trying to teach Charlie right now a lot about body language. We're talking a lot about that, but just that he's aware of that person specifically and what they might need. And hopefully that will be shaping the conversation. If what I'm instilling in him is this like empathy and kindness and respect and honor for all people, then hopefully those conversations would follow. So maybe it's less about, do I have the perfect script for this conversation? And are we having conversations about like the dignity and validity of every kind of body and person?
We're figuring this out from our vantage point while they're figuring it out from theirs. And we just keep talking about it and modeling it as best we can and expect and anticipate some uncomfortable moments along the way as they come. Ugh, yeah. They will change as they grow, like, right? The kinds of conversations that we're having will change and how the depth and nuance that we're able to infuse into those conversations will evolve and along for the ride. Cool. That was a trip.
That was something.
Thank you.
Okay, love you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You tell me when we're done, okay?
Bye.
Woohoo! This podcast is edited and perfected by Amelia of Softer Sounds.
For all the show notes and a transcript of today's episode, check out our Patreon, Scratch That Podcast. This is our hub. It's where you can join the conversation and be part of our community.
If today's episode resonated with you or made you think of someone, share it.
And if you want to support the pod and also make us glow inside, go give a 5-star review on Apple. That would be so lovely.
Thank you for being here, for listening, for being a part of this community.
We love you so much.